Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, Brendan behind the glass. It is a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. You might have caught that. You might have caught that that was our Hour 2 rejoin. That was actually a bit. You know why we did that? Because you should penalize us as much as the Houston Texans were penalized in their preseason game on Saturday night.
Well, at least they weren't the Cowboys. Jeez. I mean, between the two Texas teams, the Cowboys.
I didn't watch the Cowboys. They got penalized a lot?
Jeremy? Well, they were known for this last year, right? It was a big deal last year for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
They had 17 penalties.
You keep up with
just
Mike McCarthy.
Like that. Yeah, because he's such a bumbling idiot that all these Dallas fans want to anoint as the guy that's going to take him to a Super Bowl. And every time they do, he like pees down his leg harder and faster. It was a freaking joke.
People compare football teams or football players to like the X that got away. For Joel, he likes to look back at the X and celebrate that they're finally done.
Yeah. I mean, Aaron Rodgers was their OC, though he you know, it was like Mike McCarthy said he was the play caller. Well, he called the first play that Aaron vetoed and then called in his own play so that it would actually work. And then the Cowboys went and hired him. And I'm like, the one thing that was completely a running joke with the Cowboys, amongst other things, was how they couldn't stop getting penalized. And they just kept rattling. And the guy they drafted in the first round, the offensive lineman, like, the one thing they said about him was he probably shouldn't have gone in the first round because he's raw and he gets penalized a lot. Yeah. He had, like, two right off the bat. It was like, oh, my God, this is funny. And then
you're talking about the Cowboys guy, not Penning? The Saints guy?
The offensive lineman.
The one from Tulsa?
Yeah, the Tulsa kid.
I didn't a lot of times our show will go off the rails. I didn't expect to be talking about the Cowboys in the first 120 seconds
to,
of this show.
Because there's so many things with preseason, and, you know, and we've been talking about it. But even with only three games, it just gave you every example in the world why, especially if you know what you know about what they're going to do for this year for, like, Davis Mills. Watching what happened with Zach Wilson, especially when he wasn't hit, it's like in the first preseason game, if you're dumb enough to throw out any of your starters and they get hurt, that's on you. It's just asinine. Wade Phillips was out there actually tweeting about it too.
Really?
And he did a video tweet where he just was like, that's why you never play your starters in the preseason, at least in week one.
Here's where I'll disagree with that, push back with that a little bit. Like, the Zach Wilson thing, by the way, like, don't scramble. Don't scramble in the preseason. Like, why are you fighting for first downs? Why are you fighting to move the ball down? Like, drop back and throw the ball. Drop back and throw the ball. And look, I agree with that logic, like, 99% of the time. If I'm the Houston Texans, though, and I need to know what Davis Mills is going to be, I give Davis Mills reps. Now, here's where I draw the line, though. If you're going to give Davis Mills reps, Laremy Tunsil needs to be blocking for him. I won't even say that you need Brandon Cooks out there, because Brandon Cooks, he's your best target. It would give you a better, you know, look at Davis Mills, but he's not protecting Davis Mills, right? Maybe it would help Davis Mills if he doesn't have his number one target to, you know, look at the options, see what the defense is giving you, that sort of thing. But if you don't have your number one bodyguard, your number one security for Davis Mills, then you shouldn't be playing Davis Mills.
See, that's what I'm saying. You already know it's not a quarterback competition. You know who the starting quarterback is going to be in week one. So as much as I get it that there are, you know, teams that are having quarterback competition, like Pittsburgh, where you've got to put those guys out there because you've got to figure, or Carolina, because you've got to see at the end of the day who's going to be out there when it counts. But I don't understand putting him out there. And to your point, like, Jordan Love in the Green Bay game had three interceptions, two of which hit receivers right between the left and the right hand that ended up popping up. But it looks bad on him.
Yeah.
So at least you can shake those off and go, look, if you look at the tape, they weren't bad throws. But other than that, though, I don't want to see him in a game that doesn't matter when I know he's the guy that is expected to play the whole season when the games do matter.
Yeah. See, like, well, what's our thought on what the Texans are going to be this year? Probably not a playoff team. Well, they're going to be about developing the players, right? They're going to be about developing the young guys. They're going to be trying to find their answer on Davis Mills. So, to me, there's not as much at risk for the Texans. Like, if Davis Mills getting hurt in the preseason, okay, is that going to tank your 2022 regular season? No, your 2022 regular season was more than likely already tanked. Mm-hmm. So, like, we've talked a lot about what's Lovie Smith's goal with this team. What is his main job? What is the Texans' priority in 2022? It's to grow the young players, to learn more about your young players, and put yourself in a better position in the offseason going forward. So, like, that there's not as much at risk for the Houston Texans as there is for the Green Bay Packers or for the other teams that are supposed to be contending for the playoffs. So I'm fine with the Houston Texans playing Petrie. I'm fine seeing Dameon Pierce out there. I'm fine seeing Davis Mills out there. I'm okay with all of that because it's going to make them better. It's going to help their development, and that's the number one priority for the Texans, not the wins. No. The problem that I have is that Larry Tunsil is not protecting the dude that you're trying to learn about.
But there is a fine line, though, because as I think you recall, and I've touched on it a few times in terms of what happened last year, if you do sit out every single preseason game, you also have to prepare for the fact that there's going to be rust in week one. Like, the Packers absolutely crapped the bed against the Saints last year and got their doors blown off because none of their starters played it down in the preseason. They kept, to your point, they're not going to throw Rodgers out there unless they have their offensive line and the guys that are going to guard him. But then Rodgers came out and he absolutely crapped the bed and everybody joined in and on the fun. And they got completely just whacked, and then he kind of shook it off like, well, you know, that was like our first preseason game. That was okay. You should be practicing your ass off if you're not going to play in the games, right? You should, from a timing standpoint, from the ones versus ones perspective, where you know you're on the same team, so you're not going to take somebody's head off and light somebody up, but you're going to compete as the play's going on. At least you're getting sharp, because that's the other thing you got to avoid. I don't want Davis Mills playing in the preseason because I don't want him getting hurt. But I also need him at practice then to really, even if it's grown men playing football in shells, I need him from a timing perspective. I need the offense to be clicking so that week one, it doesn't look like you're rusty as hell.
And to me, like, it could go either one of those directions. Like, there's three options here. One is just you don't play your starters, which I can certainly understand the logic of that, and I would support that almost every single time. And even though the Houston Texans are more about development than wins, okay, great. You're going to get a better idea of the development in the regular season, so make sure they get to the regular season healthy. I can listen to the argument of, well, we need to find out more about our young player, Davis Mills. The worst of the options is that you play Davis Mills and then you don't play Laramie Tunsil. That is the worst of the three things that you could do. It makes absolutely no sense. And then go look what Davis Mills did. Davis Mills went out there, he led two drives and went three and out in both of those drives. Am I putting much stock in that? No, absolutely not. It was a net zero. I don't care. But then you have Peter King of, what is he with, SI, Monday Morning Quarterback. Like that, yeah. I don't know where Peter King is, who his employer is these days. He's talking about how Davis Mills looks awful already. And it's like, dude, it was two series, three and outs, and they were very vanilla on offense. They got nothing out of playing Davis Mills. So either don't play him in Tunsil, play him in Tunsil and actually try to look effective offensively, but don't play one or the other. It makes zero sense from the Houston Texans.
And the thing is, you don't think when Davis Mills gets into that huddle, if he knows his second string offensive line is out there, he's not going to try and light it up and set the world on fire. He's going to make sure he doesn't get hurt, and he's going to protect his own ass.
He left the field on that second series after the second three and out on back-to-back drive. He was smiling with that, you know, the lips underneath that mustache he has going on. He didn't even care. Mm-mm. So it's like, what are you doing out there? What's the point of even running him out there? But you know, that's our stance on that. What did you think of Davis Mills playing, but Laramie Tunsil and Brandon Cooks not? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. I'll say this, too. I forced myself to watch every single snap of that game.
You're a better man than me, sir.
I forced myself. Now, I did watch it on the DVR, so I was like fast-forwarding between every single play. But I watched every single snap of that football game. I tortured myself to watch every single snap of that football game. Jeff Driskel is a hard watch.
Oh, boy. You got that right.
If you're on the sidelines when Jeff Driskel is the quarterback for a football team, your life is in danger. He is awful. Yeah. He is brutal. He's terrible. And I say this, he also led the game-winning touchdown drive for the Houston Texans. The Texans' threes looked really good compared to the New Orleans Saints' threes.
Yeah. Ooh, if that's the gold star for the day and your takeaway, you're a better man than me. The minute I saw Driskel just flailing around out there. I'm like, there's a reason why they tried to make this guy a tight end. There's no way I can stomach watching this for two more quarters. Like, the fact that when we went to halftime, I was already watching the Astros and flipping backboard like you. I was recording the game.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I don't think I can watch this second half no matter what people tell me. I just can't.
I watched the game Sunday morning. I didn't even mess with it Saturday. Saturday was for the Astros, and then I watched the game, saved it for Sunday morning, had it with a little bit of the coffee. So I was able to breeze through it, but man, that guy is not an NFL quarterback. And look, I think Kyle Allen's better. Kyle Allen's not much better.
He's not, but at least he's got NFL experience where in short doses he was able to keep a team alive and in a game or two, to where at least you know you have someone that has NFL experience. But it's like we set the table for you. It's another reason why Davis Mills shouldn't play in the preseason. Because if he goes down, you just have to realize, you have to embrace the suck, you have to marry the suck for more than a year. Because that's what it's going to be. It's going to be absolute hell if Davis Mills gets hurt. Because what's behind him is not pretty.
But you think that way anyways, though, right? So, like, what is the difference?
I want them to, but I want a clear evaluation of Davis Mills. Well, no, I think the big thing is you got to evaluate Davis Mills in this next 17 games of the regular season. So the thing that's going to really muddy the waters is if he gets hurt.
So you think it's better evaluation, and this is a stupid question, it's better evaluation in the regular season than the preseason?
Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, by the end of the regular season, after this season, you need to be able to, it's going to be difficult, but the ideal scenario is you can clearly make a call on Davis Mills. He's our guy going forward, or he's not. You don't want to have muddy waters going, yeah, what we saw of him till he got hurt, mm-hmm. he looked like he could play. That shouldn't preclude you from actually having to take your first-round pick and use it on a quarterback.
Listening to Lovey and listening to Davis in the postgame, it sounds like they're going to play more in the second game and then even more in the third game. Hope Laramie Tunsil's blocking. That's all I got to say. Davis Mills, should he be playing? 713-780-ESPN. What were your week one reactions? 713-780-3776. Our week one preseason overreactions. What were some things that we liked? We know that we're going too far. We know that it's the preseason. But what were our week one overreactions? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, our week one of preseason overreactions. What are yours? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. By the way, Art Howell is going to be joining us at 1 o'clock at the top of the hour. So make sure you're tuning in for that and all of our show. We'll start with you, Blankers, Age Before Beauty. What were your week one overreactions? Which one?
What's one?
Yeah, what's your top one?
I think the defensive front seven is going to be all pro, like, disruptive. I think that the things that they showed, the things they showed against the Saints just show how good this defense is going to be under Lovie Smith in year two. And the fact that the guys that they went out and really extended themselves to get, particularly, and I always like to have you say it instead of me, but what? Obu Okoronkwo.
Let's just call him Obu.
Let's just call him Obu. The Big O. The Big O was disruptive. The Big O is going to be a force. That's why he got out of Aaron Donald's shadow, because he is going to shine as a member of the Houston Texans.
I'm with you. The pass rush looked fantastic to me. Like, even looking at the front seven, and if you want to look at one specific area, I thought the front four was really good.
What did you say, five sacks?
Five sacks.
Yeah.
Five sacks over the vaunted New Orleans Saints offense led by Ian Book.
Oof.
Fighting Irishman.
Yeah.
I think that the front four has a chance to be really good. Again, even in the offseason, we were talking about, like, which position group will be the best for the Houston Texans. That offseason chatter we like to have. Look, John Grenard is on this football team. John Grenard's going to be the best pass rusher on this football team. Grenard wasn't a factor in week one against the Saints. Yet the Texans were still able to get to the quarterback. Like, a lot of people are looking at a lot of these third stringers because they were the ones that played the most. Like, Derek Rivers, there's a good chance Derek Rivers doesn't even make this team, and he had two sacks. But you see a guy like Thomas Booker get to the quarterback. You see Oboe get to the quarterback. You see the pressures that were able to get to the Ian Book in the Saints. And look, Lovie Smith talked after the game, said both teams are playing very vanilla. There's not a whole lot of scheming going on in preseason week number one. You're not going to see a whole lot of stunts. You're not going to see a whole lot of games with the defensive line. But this, the opposite of John Grenard, you have some players that could be a factor, whether it's Obu, whether it's Addison, whether it's still the older Jerry Hughes. Like, I think you're going to find a platoon in that other defensive end spot where you have some versatility. All those guys are able to get to the quarterback in different ways. You have some situations and scenarios where you can bring in a third pass rusher and third and longs, pass rush situations like that. I think John Grenard's going to get his. And while there's not a good defensive end opposite of him, I think you might get good production just with the platoon and the rotation you have at the opposite defensive end of John Grenard.
No, you're right. Look, I think the fact that Lovey's back and Lovey with all the guys that are coming back are gonna really reap the benefits of the second year in the system. And like we said, look, Grenard really could excel if there was someone to draw some of the attention away from him because of the fact that, believe me, as much as he doesn't get publicity nationally, offensive coordinators on other teams know exactly who he is and where he is. And so that's going to be a factor. But I think that overall, look, there was good signs. It's just that's why we keep saying, look, in the preseason, you can't just lose your lunch getting excited about the fact that, you know, this team is just going to wreak havoc and do all these different things until they start playing against other teams' ones. But the fact that you have energized young talent on your roster that's running around reaping havoc on the teams, I think that's a good sign.
713-780-ESPN. What are your overreactions? 713-780-3776. Look, I think that's one overreaction that's very popular. In fact, that's probably the most popular overreaction. He looked really good on Saturday. Really, he really did.
He was what inspired this topic.
Yeah.
I watched him, and I was texting friends.
It's Detroit grammar there.
Saying that I don't have enough of him in fantasy football yet.
He looked good.
He looked
really good.
I thought that going into the preseason, him and Mac were, I don't know, going to split carries maybe. I don't need to see any more. Mac shouldn't be splitting carries. Mac is number two. Damian Pierce is a stud.
And I don't disagree, but I think that this was almost like a message being sent. Remember about a week ago I brought this up with you guys and said, is there a reason why even in practice they're saying Mac's really not getting a whole lot of touches? And I don't know if that he came in out of shape or, you know, somewhere somebody, whether it be Casario or someone on the staff just decided, hey, look, maybe we swung and missed on this one, or he's not the kind of guy we thought he was going to be. But they said pretty quickly in camp, Pierce was getting a lot of the looks and the majority of the carries, and he was doing the most with it. Well, it showed in week one. I mean, what he did against the Saints, the fact that he hit the hole definitively. Like, when he got the ball, not only did he hit the hole hard right away, but his first move, his first cut, it was solid, it was quick, it was effective, man. He was impressive.
To me, it wasn't about like the numbers. It was the running style. You know, finding the one cut, hitting his hole, and being decisive about it. There was zero hesitation, which is something that is very nice to see. 713-780-ESPN. Jalen Petrie has to be on this list, the second rounder out of Baylor. A lot of people gave Casario grief for not drafting Kyle Hamilton and instead trading down and selecting Kenyon Green, who we did not see, and who injuries has been a reason that maybe people aren't as high on him as everybody was hoping they would be. But Jalen Petrie looks fantastic. In fact, he looks better than Kyle Hamilton early sample size on that. But flying all over the field. He's playing in the box, too, which is something you see a ton out of Lovie Smith's defenses. So really excited about Jalen Petrie. And seeing him in the game backed up everything you heard about during camp, where this guy's flying around. He's looking really good. Already looks like a seasoned veteran. And in the action that we saw him, the snaps that he played, he was fantastic for the Texans.
Yeah, no, look, he was the guy. I mean, I think both of them. It was the P-squared. I mean, those two guys, Pierce and Petrie, were the two guys that were the shining stars that were screaming to you, pay attention, these guys can play. And because of the fact that both of them were draft picks, both of them coming out of this draft look like they're going to be mainstays for this team for the foreseeable future, that's a huge positive for this team. Now you just don't want to overplay them, again, because I don't want them getting hurt. Because what they showed me was enough to say they should be starting week one. And if they're starting week one, then you need these guys around. Therefore, you don't need to overplay them in the preseason when all they can do, you know, is have someone land on them or something funky can happen that could screw it all up. Because both those guys, but one on each side of the ball too, which is effective. But offensively and defensively, because of those two guys, I was impressed.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. What were your overreactions from preseason game number one? Keith, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Keith?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Real quick, my positive from the weekend from the Texans was I give Lovie Smith an A+, an A, just because of his cool demeanor on the sidelines. I think since Kubiak, for the first time in a long time, the Texans actually have a real coach. My only negative was Pip Hamilton. I don't know if the play calling was questionable or if it was just the personnel trying to get their feet wet in the first game. But he started at a C and came up to maybe a questionable B. But I think if they can get that play calling down, but everything else was pretty good. Yeah, have a good one.
Appreciate it, Keith. Look, they were being vanilla by design. Lovie Smith, I agree with you, Keith. Is a ball coach. Like, you're not going to lose games because of Lovie Smith. I'm not sure that he's going to scheme up victories like a Sean McVay might. But you're not losing anything with Lovie Smith. He is a huge upgrade over David Culley. Let me remind you, though, that David Culley also won his first ever preseason game as the Houston Texan head coach. Pep Hamilton, offensively, you're not going to take a whole lot whenever you're playing a very vanilla game plan. And when you only have two series with your number one quarterback, and even with your number one quarterback, you were very vanilla. And the second one, you had a penalty, took you right out of it. So, like, there was no way that Pep Hamilton was going to win. You're playing with Jeff Driskel. He threw three picks in the game, yet he put together a game-winning drive, which you can put a feather in Pep Hamilton's cap. I can't draw any conclusions about Pep Hamilton's game calling from preseason game number one.
And you know what? And that's good, because with the personnel he had to work with, I wasn't expecting him to do much anyway. I don't want to see him open it up and then just have, you know, there's people that are actually pleased with the fact that there was a win for the Houston Texans on Saturday night. And because of that, you wouldn't have had a win if Pep tried to open it up with the personnel he had to deal with. So, you know, if Jeff Driskel is going to be your preseason Patrick Mahomes, and you're expecting him to, like, play playground football and scramble all over and make things happen, that's not conducive to who Pep Hamilton is or the fact that this offense wasn't set up to do that.
Can I give you guys one more overreaction?
Sure.
Jalen Camp.
Jalen Camp was fantastic. I told you 3 weeks ago. The one day I went to camp, I said, look out for Jalen Camp.
They don't have a clear-cut number three, and I'm certainly not saying he's going to be that, but he had a couple of really nice plays. I don't know if you guys have ever had this in the preseason. As someone who enjoys watching preseason football, when he caught the touchdown, I didn't know who he was. Uh-huh. I had to look it up.
You don't listen to one of your hosts.
You talk plenty. I hear lots. I had to look it up. And that's like a good sign. When you're going, oh, damn, who is this guy? That was a nice play. That means he did something all right.
Now, it's going to be hard for him to make this roster. Like, you start to look at the numbers on it. It's going to be hard for him to make the roster.
I won't hear this slander.
I think that he'll be a practice squad guy, but with the fear that somebody else could pick him up.
Nah.
I thought Blake Cashman was fantastic. I want to call him Brian Cashman because of the New York Yankees general manager. Blake Cashman looked very good. It looks like Blake Cashman could potentially make this team. And then Cam Johnston. Cam Johnston could very well be the best punter in the National Football League. And we know darn well we're going to see a lot of them for the Houston Texans. They are lucky to have a punter as good as Cam Johnston.
I mean, if we're celebrating a punter, then we absolutely are going over the top.
What are you talking about? It's one of the best punters in the NFL. He flips the field.
Mine was going to be Kurt Heinisch.
Yeah.
Perfect. Notre Dame on Notre Dame crime, the way he was able to get a sack on Book. Look, again, it's preseason, but the guy was all over the field. I mean, as a rookie, the fact that no one's expecting anything of this guy and barely knew who he was, but at least when you watch the game, you heard his name called quite a bit, that it's encouraging that, again, that they're finding character guys that have a good ticker that are out there trying to bust their ass on every play. So I was impressed by him.
713-780-ESPN. What are your week one preseason overreactions? 713-780-3776. They say, Blankers, that that absence makes the heart grow fonder. But in Lance McCullers' case, it created doubt. How he silenced those doubters on Saturday. We do it next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. I've been telling you about Fitz Roofing for quite a while. If you need anything done with your roofing, then you need to go to Fitz Roofing because they have the best ratings in the business. They have the best warranties in the business. They use the best products in the business, starting with CertainTeed shingles. They're a CertainTeed Select Shingle Master company. Only 1% of the roofers in the United States have the credibility and the ability to get that kind of rating. They get it. You get it at Fitz. That's why you go to FITZRoofing.com and see all the different ways they can help you. From a leaky roof to a whole new roof on your commercial property, your business, or your home, they're going to take care of you every step of the way. By every step of the way, I mean they're going to do a free no-obligation inspection to see what you got going on that normally companies cost a service charge and just to show up at $75 to $100. Not at Fitz. Fitz is going to do it for free to tell you that they are dedicated to you and making sure that you see through your project and what you need done. They're going to give you the ultimate trust that they know what they're doing, and they're going to take care of you. Whenever you need have a problem, they're going to solve it. It's fantastic. And Corey, the owner, is also the vice president of the Houston Roofing Association because his colleagues know and trust him because he knows what he's doing. Check him out today. Again, FITZRoofing.com, or better yet, give him a call for that free no-obligation inspection. 832-521-3001. Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Blankers,
yes.
They say that that absence makes the heart grow fonder, that when someone is gone, you miss them. You miss them badly, and you can't wait to get them back. You think of them in these, you know, exaggerated ways and how great that they once were. And
or
how
you
much...
replace them, you move on, and you celebrate the fact that, you know, for as long as you had to endure the other thing, that the new guy's better.
I feel like you took that in a direction I didn't expect it to go.
Oh, sorry. Talking about you taking a couple days off?
I'm taking one day off officially as of now tomorrow.
Oh, yeah?
We'll see if Moore's coming on the back end
of
that.
Oh, it is, because the
tomorrow.
Replacement is damn good, I hear.
But anyways, do y'all have a replacement yet?
No.
So the empty seat is better. Thank you, Blanks. Thank you. I appreciate that. I was referring to Lance McCullers Jr. Mm-hmm. He made his return on Saturday. And look, I don't think with Lance McCullers Jr. that the absence made the heart grow fonder. We didn't think that from Lance McCullers. In fact, I think it created a lot of doubt from people. We heard people, oh, they should just get rid of Lance McCullers. They should trade Lance McCullers. You can't count on Lance McCullers. He's always hurt. That was a message that we got about Lance McCullers, that, you know, you shouldn't expect anything for Lance McCullers down the stretch or think that he's going to be an impact for this team. So instead of Lance McCullers' absence making the heart grow fonder, it created doubt about who Lance McCullers was. I think he silenced a lot of that doubt on Saturday, and he proved he's still Lance McCullers, who was really stinking good last year.
So I want to be fair, right? So the fact that I was highly critical of Jake Odorizzi and saying that if he has three straight starts against the A's and he excels in his first two, that it's still the A's. So it's not like you're playing a great baseball team. But from the Lance McCullers standpoint of having had almost a full year of not pitching and doing what he did in a major league game, especially since we had tried to set the table for you guys to say, hey, look, he wasn't trying to get wins and throw shutout innings in his rehab stints in the minor leagues. He was working on his stuff for this very moment. The fact that he was able to do what he did, and when we were trying to figure out, was he going to go four innings, five innings, you know, how many pitches was he going to throw? The fact that he maximized every single thing he could have done. He limited him to two hits. I mean, his pitch count was down. He got you the innings you needed so you didn't have to tax your bullpen. He looked like he was in complete and total control. And yes, he got three double play balls. But the fact that he did everything that he was supposed to do in a way that just completely refreshed your memory that if this guy is right, and again, I'm not going to base it all. I was very firm and adamant. I need to see him about 4 to 7 times. I need to see what he's got in the regular season before I'm ready to say this guy's going to be in my playoff rotation. But if the rest of them go like this one, holy cow, thanks for the memories and appreciate you refreshing mine as it relates to what he could do for this team.
We shouldn't put all of the stock in one game. We won't. We're not going to put all the stock in that one game. And Ocho's texting us, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN. What did that Lance McCullers start on Saturday do for you? Ocho says that McCullers faced an A's lineup that probably wasn't as good as the lineups he faced in Sugarland, so take it with a grain of salt. I get the sarcasm there a bit, but there's
major
that.
League hitters in there, though, too.
Yeah, I mean, the A's offense relative to Major League Baseball, not great.
Nope.
So that should be a factor. That should be something that...
This is also a team that worked the Astros for half the game.
The Astros took that series off, though. I think it's pretty clear.
Nevertheless, if we're gonna be fair about it on both sides, if they're supposed to be that stinking bad, you're supposed to do that to them every game.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. the sweep that they had in Oakland was strange. Now, one of the things we were looking at too with the was the velocity of Lance McCullers. He had some pretty good velo with the fastball. He wasn't very effective with the fastball though. 93, so like the fastball velo was there compared
was
to the 91.
He did hit 97 once.
Average.
He hit 95 a couple times. Mm-hmm. But maybe that was adrenaline, but that's what caught my eye was the fact that he was capable of getting it higher.
Yeah, so that was good to see after he was thrown at 91 at Sugar Land. They asked him about that after the game, and he's like, look, I just didn't really feel that great that game. I felt a lot better today. The stuff was good. I was seeing some stuff from Pitching Ninja, who I follow on Twitter. The sliders, as good as ever, had some wipeout slider stuff. So the arsenal was good.
He got squeezed on the bottom of the box a little bit, too.
Yeah, he did.
With the walks that he took, a couple of those were questionable because he was painting the bottom of the zone to where I wasn't mad at him for those walks because that wasn't his fault.
No. I mean, he walked four. Walks are always an issue with Lance McCullers. Last year, he led the world in walks. He led the American League in walks a year ago. But the fact he only gave up two hits over six innings, had some strikeouts there, too. As good as a start that you could want from Lance McCullers. Yes, you shouldn't put all of the stock on Lance McCullers. Say, oh, yeah, this guy is, you know, he's your number two of a playoff rotation. You got to see the whole body of work. We do understand that. But to me, what it did was it reminded me who Lance McCullers was. Because you're right, I'm not going to jump to the conclusion of this guy, give him a playoff start right now. Now, you start to entertain the possibilities and the scenarios, but I remembered 2021 Lance McCullers. I remembered the guy that was second in the American League in ERA last year, that finished seventh in the Cy Young voting. They gave up one run in two playoff games. That is what I remembered. That's what it did for me. Like, okay, we all knew Lance McCullers was coming back. We all knew he was a good pitcher. But to see him perform the way that he did was like, I forgot how great Lance McCullers was last season.
It did the same thing to me because I'm looking at this when he gets ready to pitch. And I was excited to see him pitch, and I wanted to make sure I was home and ready to go from pitch one so I could see exactly what he could bring to the table and where he was as opposed to what his last start in Sugar Land. But I'm with you. After I saw him settle in and the way that he had command on the mound, no matter what the situation was, it reminded me that we're not waiting for a Jake Odorizzi veteran over-the-hill starter to come back and see if he can eat innings and be one of the guys at the back end of your rotation. It reminded me that when this guy is right, it's like making a blockbuster without giving up a prospect to get a frontline starter at the deadline. Because if he steps right in and he's capable of being one of your top three starters, you just got better. And that's a big deal because now your bullpen got better. For as much as I was harping on bullpen and Will Smith was the only move they made, your bullpen, if you add two of those young starters to your bullpen, mm-hmm. I don't care which the two, Javier and Garcia or whoever it is, you put those guys in the bullpen as one along, you know, whether they're a long relief guy or a Javier, that no matter where you put him in and whatever the leverage, he'll come in and get the job done for you. You just got better across the board.
No doubt. I mean, it makes your pitching staff a little bit deeper. It's an upgrade too, because like one of the things we were talking about was like when Odorizzi was still around and the Astros were talking about trading from a surplus of their starting pitching for like a Luis Castillo. If you're going to do that, it has to be a pitcher that is clearly better than Jose Urquidy, Luis Garcia, Christian Javier, which is very hard to do. It's hard to be better than those guys because those guys at times have all been very good. Christian Javier, for the entire body of work, he had another great start yesterday, has been incredibly good. I think he's one of the best pitchers in the American League when you look at what Javier's done in 2022. Lance McCullers, if you get Lance McCullers at his peak, and look, one game is not going to define who he is in 2022, but it reminds you of who he was last year, and if you get the Lance McCullers from last season, who was your ace, who was dominant in the postseason, shouldn't have pitched on short rest, though, by the way, right. Who finished top 10 in the Cy Young.
There was no reason for that either.
No, he shouldn't have been pitching on short rest, and I hope that's a lesson learned for James Click, Dusty Baker, and everybody that was involved in that decision. Not sure who made the call. I'm sure it was a collection of all of them. I hope that they all learned their lesson not to pitch anybody.
I had forgotten
on 3 days
that
rest.
Brought it up because I was adamant at the time about that they didn't need to do that.
Same.
But you're absolutely right. Now looking back in retrospect, the fact that you could factor that into as to possibly one of the reasons why he experienced the injury he experienced, yeah, that was a complete misstep by the Astros.
Look, he was effective in that game, but he missed, what, 7 months because of that game?
Yep.
I mean, I don't know how much it played into it, but it certainly didn't help.
Here's the other thing that you remember, too, is the fact that not just all the things you were mentioning, but the fact that this guy has been a staple in this run of 5+ years with this team. The fact that we can count all the curveballs and we know what he did with Charlie Morton when we needed him there. But no matter where he's been, he's handled the bright lights. He's handled the big stage. He's experienced. And he's now more of a pitcher than a guy that can throw that has devastating stuff.
Yep.
He's a pitcher that between his ears knows what he has to do and how to go about doing it. And I think that that's a valuable commodity to have when you get into a playoffs like this one where the American League has got, you know, not just the Yankees. There's some teams that if you pitch and don't throw, you have a sizable advantage. But if you get into an arms race with the Blue Jays and just arm for arm, they can match you.
He still has swing and miss stuff.
Oh, yes.
But he's been like the Framber Valdez, too. The Framber Valdez to where he has unbelievable stuff, but he's kind of harnessed the stuff. He's kind of sacrificed a little bit of stuff for the overall seven innings of one particular game. Now, he can go get it.
Right.
He can go find it for an at-bat, for a pitch. But he's much more of a pitcher now. Pitch to contact, ground balls, doesn't give up the long ball, gets the double play. Did that quite a bit in the Oakland game. So he is very much that pitcher. And look, if he's 2021 Lance McCullers, and yes, we're not going to define his 2022 on one game. Yes, there is still a long period of time for Lance McCullers to get into the postseason. Yes, they were facing the Oakland A's. But for me, it opened up who he was last year. And he could really be the second best pitcher on this team, minimum third, if he lives up to that expectation of what he was a season ago.
No question about it. And I think that, you know, 8-3-2 ending in 4-9-6-5. Fellas, McCullers is definitely starting in the playoffs. I don't know what you're debating. We're debating the fact this was one start. Like I said, I'm not putting the horse in front of the cart. I just said I need to see 4 to 7 of these. I need to see a total body of work. I need to see how his arm recovers. I need to see how he's recovered. I need to see that he's doing this against teams other than the A's. And I need to see that he continue to be effective. Then I'll be ready to say that he's ready to start. I don't think anybody in the Astros is penciling him in just yet.
Yeah, I mean, if he pitches his next 6 starts and gives up 6 runs a game, he's not earning the postseason start. He's still got to be good. He's still got to be good Lance McCullers.
He controls his own destiny as of now.
Oh, for sure.
Because, you know, he doesn't want to be in the bullpen. But if he has a couple missteps on these starts, he doesn't control his own destiny anymore.
And his resume gives him the leg up, too, versus the Javier Garcias, the Urquidy's. If Lance McCullers pitches well, he's going to be a playoff starter. There's no argument there. But if he pitches to a 6 or 7 ERA for the rest of the season, he's not going to be a starter in the playoffs. 713-780-ESPN. I want to talk about that playoff rotation, though. As we spitball it on August 15th, what does that playoff rotation look like? And what did that Lance McCullers start on Saturday do for you? 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Killer Beast on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Lance McCullers was nails on Saturday. What did that start do for you? Absence makes the heart grow fonder. Didn't seem that way for Lance McCullers, but I think he might have reminded everybody of how good he can be. Also, what does that Astros playoff rotation look like once the Astros get there? 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Eric, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Eric?
Hey, I think Lance did great. Of course, I think the odd man out is going to be Luis Garcia. His last few starts are not, you know, not that, didn't go that well for him. And also, Dusty's winning in spite of James Glick. He should have traded for an outfielder. Now we don't have one because Brantley's out. James Glick should have known that. I'll hang up and listen.
Appreciate it, Eric. Look, James Glick knew that Michael Brantley was potentially going to miss the rest of the season. They did imaging on Michael Brantley, and they knew the extent of the injury. There's no doubt that the Astros did the imaging. They had the MRI. They saw what was going on with Michael Brantley. James Glick mentioned that they were hoping they would get Brantley back. It sounded to me like he was thinking about playing through the injury. Eventually, it was just too much pain. It wasn't going to happen, so he had the surgical procedure. They knew all of that ahead of July. They didn't know he was going to be out for the year, but they knew ahead of that that Michael Brantley was potentially going to miss the rest of the season and was going to require surgery. James Glick thinks they traded for an outfielder. James Glick, every single time they've talked about Trey Mancini, has mentioned that Trey Mancini can play the corner outfield. We saw Trey Mancini play left field again Saturday. I don't know about you, Blankers. I thought he handled himself pretty well out there.
I was going to say, as much as I don't want to crap on Aledmys Díaz, Aledmys Díaz had a few hiccups out there in left field.
He had trouble with the wall.
Yeah, the game before. So the fact that Mancini, right off the jump, first play, a running, avoid the little outlet that comes out down the third baseline, foul ball territory, catches that one. I don't think he did anything to say that he couldn't play the position. He actually held his own, and then what he did offensively told you exactly why James Glick made the move he made at the deadline that we kept talking about as the best fit for the versatility of being able to play outfield, first base, and fill in at DH.
Yeah, Yeah, he looked very good in left field. I feel like Click did a good job of adding an outfielder to this team. Now, he didn't add a center fielder. We talked about it ahead of the deadline. It'd be great if you could go out there and find a center fielder. There wasn't a center fielder out on the market. Which center fielder was traded for ahead of the August 2nd deadline that you would just be like, oh, yeah, that's great for this team? It wasn't out there. We were mentioning names like Michael A. Taylor, who's having a decent season, but has been awful offensively his entire career.
Who's having a down year.
And it wasn't traded.
Right.
And, like, the names that everybody was talking about weren't
Bader's
traded.
Not offensive. Bader's not going to do anything more offensively than what you already have on the roster.
Yeah, exactly. And he's not healthy. So, like, the names that everybody was talking about as an upgrade in center field weren't on the market or were not traded. Cedric Mullins, Brian Reynolds, who's actually terrible defensively in center field. There wasn't a quality center fielder dealt at the deadline. So, was there quality outfielders? Yeah, there was quality outfielders. Juan Soto got traded. Andrew Benintendi got traded. But James Click envisions Trey Mancini as an outfielder, and we saw him out in left field Saturday. I thought he did a pretty good job, and it'll be interesting to see if Dusty uses him out there in left field a little bit more the rest of the season. Alex is asking us on our Twitch, mm-hmm. if you had to choose Alvarez or Mancini in left field.
Boy. I mean, Jordan's got a stronger arm. Jordan already knows how to play in Minute Maid Park for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I hope the other is DHing, but if I have to choose between the two in the playoffs, it's definitely Jordan.
If I had one game, I had to win everything. It was the most important game of the season. Jordan's my left fielder. Mancini's my DH. If it's the rest of the regular season, I want Trey Mancini in left field, so I'm not exposing Jordan Alvarez to the injury. Give me Jordan in left field during the playoffs. Yep. Give me Mancini in left field during the regular season. 713-780-ESPN. What do you do with the playoff rotation? Because it is crowded. It's even more crowded now that Lance McCullers has come back. And Christian Javier, I noticed that, like, he was outstanding yesterday. I didn't realize it until this morning. He's got a sub-3 ERA on the year. Christian Javier is sub-3 ERA on the season. Christian Javier, he would be eighth in the league in ERA if he had enough innings to qualify. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball. He's second in strikeouts per nine inning in the American League. He's borderline dominant. So, like, what do you do with this playoff rotation if you had to decide today?
I mean, to me, the playoff rotation, if I had to decide today, it's really risky for me because I haven't seen enough of Lance. But I think that the top two are just obviously in Sharpie, and that's JV and Fromber. And then if I go down the list from there, I think that Urquidy has earned my trust to be the number three starter, especially because it's very easy to convert Javier back to the bullpen, and we know that he's been there, done that, and does it effectively. Now it comes down to Garcia versus a Lance, and I think Lance is in, and I think Garcia becomes another bullpen arm for you. And I think you roll with that and take your chances, because I believe that, like I said, the ability to pitch, not throw, and have that moxie on the mound in the playoffs means something. And I think Lance on the mound, assuming no health issues, is the guy that I would run out there.
Yeah, I think if JV's your one, Fromber's your two, they both deserve that. Lance McCullers, look, we're kind of predicting what the rest of the season is going to look at for Lance, but we know his ceiling. I'm not sure exactly, because to me, Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy, Christian Javier, and Lance McCullers all deserved starts. I might even toy around with a piggyback with the four of them starting, like, between the four of them, two of them are starting, and then the games that they're not starting, they're pitching right behind the starting pitcher as well, with the idea of either one of those guys going 3-4 innings and trying to take you 7 innings deep into a game. I feel like you can use that as a weapon, because Lance McCullers is going to be able to get guys out unless he just hits a wall. Christian Javier has been fantastic. He gets guys out all the time. Luis Garcia and Jose Urquidy both get guys out as well. I hate the idea of using two of those guys as, like, these long relievers that you're only bringing up in mop-up duty. I like the idea of the piggyback. I like the idea of the stack. I don't care what combination, but of those four, Lance McCullers, Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy, piggyback two of them in game three, piggyback the other two in game four, and hope between the two of them they take you into the seventh inning.
Yeah, no, and I think that, again, most teams would kill for that. I mean, the fact that they have the options that they have, the fact that they have the ability to, and like I said, it's one thing when we knew the Orioles, before they traded Odorizzi, and then even after they traded Odorizzi, you realized you still had so many options that other teams would kill for because you have so many effective pitchers. And like you mentioned, when you look at Javier's numbers, and again, we're hypercritical of everything that they do and don't do and how things go, to say that, you know, has he been his best lately? Well, even when we say, well, maybe he hasn't been his A-plus game, maybe we're overly critical when you look at the numbers and say, but the dude's ERA says he's outstanding. So now you say, I'm going to add a guy that was literally my ace a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to find a spot for him in the top four. how can that not make your entire pitching staff that much better and make you that much more of a factor in the playoffs to say, while all these other teams are having injuries and having their pitchers really kind of slip up, the six-man rotation and the ability to have depth across the board is going to give you an advantage that I don't think there's another team in baseball that has.
Yeah.
Maybe the Dodgers, but the Dodgers are using their guys a lot more than the Astros are.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about the Dodgers until there's a World Series. And if you're in the World Series, I mean, you have some interest in who you play, but it's a World Series. You're expecting to play somebody good. 713-780-ESPN. What would you do with the playoff rotation if you were starting the playoffs today? 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. John, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Go ahead, John.
So, you know, today I was looking at Verlander's stats, you know, and I saw that his MVP season that he had back in, I believe, 2012, his numbers this year all across the board are better. So, you know, everyone thinks the Judge is the unanimous MVP or that he's going to be the MVP, but I think that Verlander really has a shot, you know, but the bias towards the New York market, you know, I believe that Verlander could really, like, surprise some people in the MVP race.
Appreciate the call, John. Look, I hear what you're saying, and I saw the same thing when I was watching the telecasts the last couple of games where they were comparing that MVP Cy Young season to his numbers this year. But, he, you know, he's got two things going against him. One, he's a pitcher that pitches every fifth or sixth day, as opposed to a guy like Aaron Judge who has the potential to possibly, since the whole steroid controversy, hit over 60 bombs, over 125-plus RBIs, and do all the things that he's doing from an average standpoint and otherwise, that, you know, and you also meant what you mentioned and the fact that he's playing in New York. I don't think that you're going to see Verlander overtake Aaron Judge, but I think that there's a legit chance that Justin Verlander cracks the top two or three in terms of at the end of the season if he continues to do this. Now, tomorrow night's a big game because Dylan Cease is his number one competition right now, it looks like, for Cy Young in the American League. And those two guys squaring off are going to be must-see TV from a pitching perspective.
Yeah.
And that could tell you some things that writers will probably remember a little bit to see how that matchup goes. But I think that, you know, obviously he's the front runner for Cy Young, which is fantastic. I think that considering him for MVP, especially when you got a guy in New York doing what Judge is doing, I just don't think it's going to happen.
Same. Verlander's numbers this year versus his MVP numbers, you can make the case having a better year. It's also a lot different time in how voters vote. A lot of times voters now just look at the war, right? And you can make the case that that's not the smart thing to do, but it's the trend. It's what riders are doing. I like this guy's war versus this guy's war. If it's close, maybe I'll go to the winning team. But it's the reason that Shohei Ohtani has been the MVP on a non-playoff team, and it's the reason that Mike Trout has been, you know, the whatever time MVP, not being on playoff teams for a majority of them. Verlander's been terrific. I can't wait for that matchup tomorrow between he and Cease. I think the fact that the Astros are so much better than the White Sox, that Verlander's the pretty heavy favorite between those two contenders for the Cy Young. But if you're just going off war, which a lot of baseball writers do these days, whether it's right or wrong, Judge has a war of 7. Verlander's a war of 4. Like, it's really not that close. And I know that the New York bias exists. We know that we like to pay attention to that. And I do think that we do see some favoritism when it comes to that. That's not the case with Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge has been fantastic this year.
You know what? And the bias goes both ways, right? There's a bias amongst the writers pro-New York. There's a bias amongst teams that hate the Yankees in their fan base, like here in Houston, that goes against New York. You cannot take anything away from Aaron Judge. I mean, you want to talk about must-see TV every time he steps in the box. He's not letting you down, whether it's for average, for power. You know, he's an above-average outfielder. I mean, he does everything this year to where, as much as you'd like to crap on him because he's a Yankee, he is running away with it. And you can say the ifs, buts, candies, nuts. If Yordan was healthy and had stayed healthy all year, could he have competed with Aaron Judge? Possibly. But still, those are pretty astronomical numbers he's putting up. Yeah,
he's been amazing this year. He really has.
In a contract year, that's what makes it more amazing.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN. Art Howe, former Houston Astro manager, just one of his stops in the big leagues, former player for the Astros as well. He joins the Killer Bees next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.